Everything's against me and it's got me down. If I jumped in the river, I would probably drown. No matter how I struggle and strive, I'll never get out of this world alive. These shabby shoes I'm wearing all the time, they're full of holes and nails. Brother, if I stepped on a worn-out dime, I bet a nickel I could tell you if it was heaven or hell.
Lemon face. Lemon face. All right.
When's the last time you saw Blazing Saddles?
I think like 3 months ago.
Oh, good.
Shit is hilarious.
Good for you. It is, huh?
Yeah.
You do, huh?
I do.
You know what else is hilarious?
The Who Goes There podcast?
Yes.
Welcome to episode 419. This is Jorge.
This is Jacob.
And this is Reed.
Are you telling me that the 420 episode is going to be... what's the movie? Next episode is going to be what?
Fucking Quiet Place?
No.
Oh, the next episode to come out or record?
Yeah.
Yeah, what is the next episode?
It's Coffee Table and then...
No. It's not long.
It's going to be Long Legs, right?
No, dude, it's going to be a Quiet Place. That's the next movie
we're jumping it.
Quiet Place, Maxine.
Because, dude, Quiet Place comes out this weekend, Maxine next weekend, and Long Leggies the next weekend.
Okay.
So, dude, it goes together, though. Like smoking weed in a quiet place, you know?
You need a quiet place to smoke weed.
Because it's illegal, dude, and you got to hide from the man, dude. You got to hide from the hall monitor.
Anyway, dude. This is Jorge.
This is Jacob.
This is Ree again.
There we go.
I do feel like we're in the upswing with the horror movies. I think we got most of the trash out of the way, I think.
We've had a lot of releases this year.
He fucking Donald Duck that shit. He went,
fucking Biden, dude. He
He inspires me.
Are you blaming this on Biden?
Yeah, dude.
Okay. His cognitive fucking fugue state, like, came through the phone and infected.
He's fucking sundowning, and we're all just, like, feeling the...
He's sundowning?
We're fucking feeling the results of it.
Collective sundowning? Trickle-down sundowning?
Democratic sundowning.
Yes. I think we've had a lot of horror offerings that were... not too shabby, like compared to this point last
year. Like
Tarot was fantastic.
Yeah,
Imaginary.
Nah. We also had some absolute trash. Jacob and I have another absolute, amazingly bad movie to discuss before the main feature. But hopefully we're in for a treat.
Yeah,
we're in the throes of summer, and summer has lined up three in a row. Three big horror releases, whether or not we like them, we have yet to see, but...
It's true.
If fucking Long Legs is bad, I'm gonna be really, really deflated.
Yeah.
That would be incredibly sad, because it'd be like, well, what's life to live for, dude?
Yeah, Smile 2.
Okay, I'm in.
I'm in, too. And they said, apparently it had some test audience showings, and they said the distributor said the response was overwhelmingly enthusiastic, and so the distributor's...
I mean, that could be bad.
It could be.
They could be enthusiastically hating
it. And there's been a lot of stories, which are the outliers, about films that are considered classics now that had horrible test screenings, you know? But... again, those are the exceptions.
Right.
Generally. But, yeah.
Shit. A couple trailers dropped. One of them, Nosferatu.
Robert Eggers.
I mean, yeah. I saw the trailer. I didn't see it in theaters. I meant to. But because it was being shown exclusively for the first weekend in front of bike riders. But now it's out on YouTube, and it looks timeless, just like all of his films. You know, it's fucking like just the style of it. You would never know, like, you know, at what point this movie was filmed. It just looks fucking really crazy. I think he invented like a camera lens or something that only captures certain light and colors, so the whole movie has like a bluish hue to it, and that's because of the camera lens that they created or some shit like that. So. Yeah, no, it's...
Because maybe he didn't want to go in post-production and sit there and tinker with it like arbitrarily, right? Yeah. You know what I mean?
He's always trying to find something weird and inventive with his films, you know, especially the research and everything, trying to make it as grounded as possible. So yeah, looking forward to that. And then the other trailer that dropped today, Mel Gibson's Flight Risk.
I didn't see the trailer, but I'm already fucking, you know, how I feel about Gibson's filmography.
You love him as like a spiritual leader.
Dude, the guy, he's an old guy. No. Dude, the guy is fucking insane. The guy is insane, okay? And then as a director, he's like, when we talk about actor directors, he's got to be one of the fucking best. I mean, I'm not fucking around right now.
I know, yeah. No,
like Braveheart, I love Braveheart.
You're not memeing right now?
No, I fucking love Apocalypto, even though if the last third's a little Hollywoodish, which comes out of nowhere. And fucking Hacksaw Ridge, oh! You know, but this pairing of this premise and Mark Wahlberg's trash ass.
Yeah.
Damn, this looks like some fucking junk food Gibson, dude.
The trailer is something else, man. And Mark Wahlberg plays a psycho hitman, because the story is a CIA hired a pilot to escort this witness to a across the country on a trial or something like that. He's testifying against the mob, and it turns out the pilot, Mark Wahlberg, is actually secretly a hitman who's there to kill the fucking witness. Mm-hmm. And the whole trailer just spoils the entire plot, but he's unhinged crazy man, and like there's a scene where they pull on his hat and reveals that he's got, you know, little cul-de-sac hair thing going on, and it's Mark Wahlberg, and he's got this crazy like southern accent
against type.
Yeah. And it's this is supposed to be the top, like one of the top 10 most blacklisted scripts in Hollywood, unproduced, highest demanded unproduced scripts in Hollywood.
Been floating around. It was bought for,
And Mel Gibson's directing it.
Oh, he did it.
It didn't even say his name in the trailers. It's from the director of Apocalypto, you know?
That's what I'm saying. And the name Flight Risk, like, Mel Gibson has been a flight risk. You know what I mean? Like, it's fucking perfect.
And Mark Wahlberg said he would have stopped 9/11 if he was on that plane. So, like, this is, like, the perfect movie for
him. Which one, Mark? Which one?
Which one, yeah.
Yeah, so I'm hoping it's psychotic and entertaining.
Yes.
Did you guys say you watched the movie The Hitman on Netflix?
I did.
No, yes. He did, though.
Yes.
And it was...
Did you watch it? And you liked it?
It's Linklater.
I liked it, but it's nowhere even close in, like, top 10-ish, you know, Richard Linklater films. Did you watch it? Yeah. It's cutesy, you know what I mean? I know, I can see you being like, oh, it's cute. Yeah, I know, you probably didn't like it.
I fucking hated it, man. I did not like it.
It's a true story, dude.
Oh, good, dude. It's not fucking...
That means the movie's good.
Sixth grade teacher, dude. He's fucking doing fucking Hitman.
This is like Linklater when he did something like School of Rock, where it doesn't feel like it fits at all in his filmography.
He's a chameleon.
Yeah.
Right?
But I liked like the one that's like very coded Linklater shit. You know what I mean?
Oh. Yeah, like what? Like fucking Boyhood?
I like Boyhood. I like the Four trilogy. I love his rotoscope films, you know, all that shit. But all the talkies, you know.
Don't talk to me about his rotoscope films, dude. I know all about this.
Yeah, you know about dreams, dude?
I know all about dreams, dude.
Fuck, man.
The trick is to make your waking life as real as your dreams. This is dumb. I think if Jorge rewatched Waking Life, he would fucking hate it now. It's not your thing, huh?
No.
That's not, huh?
No.
And the Alex Jones is in that shit, too, with the bullhorn.
Yeah. It's probably not my thing either, but I did love... What? I mentioned it last week. I loved Scanner Darkly, watching it now, not as a teenager.
I love it.
Loved it.
Yeah. I love, too, how sci-fi paranoid thriller it is with little to no visual effects at all.
Yeah.
Aside from the rotoscoping.
Because
it already feels otherworldly and shit.
Yeah.
Like... Yeah, it's great.
So yeah, so not for you, huh?
Not for me.
What else did you check out?
We finished Dark Matter, which was I've been talking about for the last couple weeks. It ended very, very
C+
adequately. Yeah, so that's all I can say.
God damn it.
No, I think it's fine. It deviates from the novel a decent amount, but I do think that, given the source material, it ends as cute as it should. It's the book is very cute. The ending of the book is very cute. And this does it justice, even though it does it differently. Go ahead. There we go.
A little pop.
A little pop.
Where and how do you, not how, I guess, when do you find the time to read, man? Because I feel like you've been so busy with even trying to find time to watch the movies.
So Are you calling him a liar, dude?
You calling me a liar, dude? You don't think I read? No. Truthfully, a lot of my reading is done via audiobooks. Because I drive.
Same here. Yeah.
Just call it 4 hours a day. So there's a lot of audiobook time.
Okay.
And I know that's not considered actual reading, because. but yeah, that's where I do most of my reading.
Same here. At work, audiobooks.
Yeah.
Gotcha. Okay. What about you, dude?
What about me? Okay. I forgot to mention last time, but now I can mention it this time. I fucking canceled Disney Plus like a year ago because I was like, fuck Disney Plus.
I think my like 2 year free trial, it was like 2 years when I got like a new iPhone. It's like about to expire and I don't think anyone's going to renew it.
Yeah. And then, yeah, I don't blame you. And then I got like a wild thing. There was two things particularly. I wanted to check out The Acolyte and goddamn no, but I'm glad I watched 3 episodes and that's enough. Mm-hmm. The other thing I really wanted to watch though was X-Men 97.
Yeah.
And I'll be goddamn, dude. I could have been as cynical and pessimistic and fuck nostalgia, blah, 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 blah. It's not just nostalgia. Like, it does something that's almost impossible. Like, it nails the tone. It nails the animation style and improves on both. It nails the characters and improves on them. So it's like, it's in 1997. It continues where the series left off. The atmosphere and vibe are perfect. And it deepens the lore and all of this stuff. And it's fucking, like, it is actually, it's nostalgia backed by just quality when the fucking theme song starts every episode.
And that's so rare. Squeedly-dee-dee. Yeah, I feel like that's rare now.
Well, because I'm like, fuck yeah, dude. I can't wait for this episode.
Da-da.
Another thing they're doing is they're taking several fucking classic X-Men arcs from the comics. And there were some complaints online. They were going through them too quickly. Because they go through like Executioner's Song and the Trial of Magneto within like 2 episodes crammed together. But I get it. They're like, we might not have this shot again. So just let's just put the best shit in the thing. And it's fucking great. And it's also, there's some great choices. Like one of the story arcs is Magneto is heading the X-Men in Professor X's absence. Which sounds like, why the fuck does that happen? But it's part of the Trial of Magneto storyline. It's great, man.
That's cool.
I could not. And there's some horror-y. I sent you guys like some videos of it because I was up at like 1 a.m. watching it. Like, oh, it has Mr. Sinister.
That's dope.
Mr. Sinister is fucking dope. And they need to put him in the movies some point.
Nah, they'll fuck him up.
And not make him suck. John Hamm was supposed to play him at one point.
Mm.
Yeah. We'll see. But, but dude, and you know what he does is fuck with DNA and biology and a lot of horror-y tropes. Like the little scenes I showed you, it was like an homage. I can't. Is it homage or homage?
Homage
to what's the one with Sam Neill, the fucking John Carpenter movie?
In the Mouth of Madness.
You had some In the Mouth of Madness. You had some fucking Nightmare on Elm Street. You had like several horror tropes smashed together for this Mr. Sinister shit, which works perfectly.
Which episode with the fucking was character. That?
Episode 4.
I think it was that episode because I saw like a ranking of all the episodes, and there was like one or two episodes that like skyrocketed like way above the rest, like in quality.
Yeah, episode 4 is fantastic, and then so definitely recommend that if you haven't seen it already. What else though? Oh. We'll wait on the exorcism. I like Ted Demi a lot these days, and I wanted to, you know, I watched Philadelphia with Tom Hanks.
Tom Hanks, Philadelphia?
Yeah.
And Antonio Banderas?
Yeah, and Bruce Springsteen.
Streets of Philadelphia. La 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 la. The avenue sucking cocks for glue. Sucking cocks,
dude,
for
it had,
glue.
It had, yeah, man, that's what he said. No, he didn't say it, but it had me listen to that song on Spotify for like 2 days straight. And that's why I sent you a text, which you guys are like, what the fuck is he talking about? I'm like, fuck like this, dude. Fuck like Springsteen's Streets of Philadelphia. Great fucking movie, and also a great... it's 30 years old, and it's coming... It's early 90s, right after, like, people, the onset of the AIDS thing, and to see how far the thing has come since then. And it's also Hank's, like, pre-two Oscar wins. Boop. That's our song.
It is our song.
And Denzel, who doesn't like Denzel? He's in a supporting role in this movie, and he fucks.
Hmm.
So, Philadelphia for the horror crowd. And then...
for the homies.
I like Ted Demme, dude. He did Silence of the Lambs and then Philadelphia. He did Stop Making Sense.
Oh, shit.
Yeah, he did... Okay. He's le art. Yeah. And then later on, he did the fucking Manchurian Candidate remake. So you know something's up with that guy. But then...
what's up with the youth on that one,
What's up with the youth with Ted Demme, dude? And then... let me see. We can't do The Exorcism yet. Oh, fucking... Sophia and I are doing a rewatch because we never watched it together. And this is only my second time ever seeing this show again. It's Breaking Bad, which... Nothing to be said about Breaking Bad that hasn't already been said a million times. But 10 years on after the finale... This shit is incredible, dude. We just started season 4. It is, dude. Don't look at me like that. It is unbelievable fucking writing. Seriously. Takes full advantage of the long form possibilities of television. Shit you could not do in a film. You could not get that guy in 2 hours where he'd need to go in a film. It would have to be long form or a novel. It's like fucking Shakespearean tragedy. You don't like it, huh? You're going to like talk shit about Breaking Bad?
Damn.
That's a mistake.
I saw it all the way through one time, and I think it was when the final season was airing, so I just started and kind of finished it all in one go. Never revisited it.
It's fucking...
Yeah.
It's got a 9.5 for a reason. What, Jorge? Why the face? I don't think you're remembering this show.
You're one of the guys that hated the final episode or something.
I don't like The Sopranos also, to be honest with you.
I never did The Sopranos.
I don't like Sopranos. I didn't like The Wire. Like I don't like
The Wire's fucking
tough. I don't like a lot of those.
The prestige best shows ever.
Yeah, I just...
Did you like Mad Men? I liked it a lot up to season 4. It was amazing. That shit was amazing too.
I feel like such a whiny little bitch baby, but I can't.
I'm glad. I'm glad you don't like... No, but you not liking Breaking Bad kind of trips me out, because it's got something for everybody, and it's just so fucking well written to me. Especially because we watched the movie last night that we're doing for the show, and then immediately went to Breaking Bad, and I was just like, look how much fucking better this show is than what we just watched. Okay, let's just kidding. And then that's it, man. That's it, dude.
Okay.
X-Men 97.
How dare you?
X-Men 97 is my recommendation of life.
Okay.
And then, how about you?
Yakub?
Oh, man. I checked out, Courtney and I, we sometimes like to watch like real quick, like because they're only like 9-minute videos on YouTube, like Watch Mojo or Looper. They do like listicles, like top this, top that. And they did like... Top 20 comedies since 2000, you know, up till now. And there was one movie, I've heard of all of them, some I like, some I didn't like, but there's one I've never even heard of, never seen, so I checked it out, because the clip they showed it.
And it was Dumb and Dumber.
Yeah. No, Best in Show.
You've never seen Best in Show? Yeah, see, I own that shit.
Whoa!
I have never, after a movie, been like, I can't, well, besides Amadeus, I can't believe I've never seen that movie.
Is that the only one of that series you've seen?
What do you mean series? Like
Christopher Guest. Yeah.
Christopher Guest. I did see Spinal Tap when I was like early teens.
Have you seen Waiting for Guffman?
No. I know that movie too, man.
A Mighty Wind.
A Mighty Wind is amazing.
Best in Show's fucking great.
Okay, so I gotta check out the other ones. Parker Posey's
fucking hilarious. Dude. The whole cast.
Of the bunch of them, I think Spinal Tap is probably the worst. Like, and that's probably saying something.
And it's the most iconic.
But to me, I think Mighty Wind, for me, is my favorite.
Are they all mockumentaries? Or
yeah, all, he created, he invented, as far as I know, that mockumentary format.
Yeah. Yeah.
Best in Show is amazing, but I like A Mighty Wind.
I mean, like, as far as like a movie that involves having to direct animals and shit like that, like, this movie was fucking so funny, dude.
That's rad. I love that you love it.
The director, yeah, he plays the dude with the hound dog and shit.
Oh, dude, have you seen The Princess Bride?
Yeah, a long time ago. Yeah.
So you remember the guy who's like the six-fingered man?
Okay.
Inigo Montoya wants to kill?
Yeah.
That's also Christopher Guest. Yeah. So the guy, guy who's fucking the hound dog fucking guy.
I got it.
Where are you going, hound doggy?
Yeah, he plays Guffman and Waiting for Guffman. It's dude.
He's a chameleon?
Yeah.
Dude, I was fucking dying. Courtney and I were having
A Mighty Wind is Best in Show, but with bluegrass bands.
Wait. Okay.
It's fucking hilarious. Yeah,
he's
man.
Fucking Nigel in
Holy.
And Spinal Tap.
Okay.
He's all, this song is called Let My Love Pump. It's great. Great. Everyone loves that.
I'm glad you liked it.
I was
awesome.
So, like, I could not believe, because there's so many movies, obviously, I haven't seen, iconic films, but I know them. But, like, I've never heard of this movie. Yeah. And it was in, like, the top 20 of since 2000. And I was like, I gotta watch it.
Dude, that scene where Parker Posey and her husband are at the, God, at the therapist.
Yeah.
And they're, like, you know, talking about the dog. And it takes you, like, 20 minutes to get to the point where they're talking about the dog.
And, not like
and
a
it's
child.
Like, dude, it's like the slow reveal of that whole thing is just, like, it's comedic timing perfected.
Yeah.
Yeah. And Guest doing the fucking ventriloquist shit. I was, dude.
Oh, and then the freaking lesbian couple. What's her name?
Lynch.
Oh, my God.
And Coolidge. Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah. I was like, dude, this cast is stacked.
The movie's fucking madness.
Yeah.
Dude.
I'm a huge fan now. And I'm so glad I checked that
dude
out.
Dude keeps getting cucked because his wife's fucking boned everybody.
Probably a dog or two.
It's fucking crazy.
Dude, I loved it, man. And then I was supposed to watch Bike Riders. I wanted to check it out because I was a big fan of. I've only seen one other Jeff Nichols film in which I rewatched because I wanted to go through this little.
Take Shelter, dude.
No, I haven't seen that one. That's one I watched, but I rewatched Mud first. I've seen that one.
Midnight Special, dude.
I wanted to check that. I didn't have time, but I checked out Mud and Take Shelter. Love both of them. I've seen Mud before. Great performance. Love great coming of age film and stuff. Take Shelter like blew me away. Like Michael Shannon's performance in that was so fucking crazy, man.
That's when he was one of the most like promising fucking actors.
Yeah. And I want him in more. I want him in more leading roles. When I saw him, like, I can't believe he only had like a couple opportunities, and it's with Jeff Nichols.
Well, when he was cast as like Zod way back then,
yeah.
I was just like, oh fuck! And then it was okay.
It was middling trash.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I checked out Take Shelter in Mud, and then did
it's
not.
It's cool when he goes, "I will find him." That part's dope.
Yes, that is.
Snyder nailed that part.
I do like Man of Steel. I know.
I like Man of Steel more than Jorge. The scene where Kevin Costner looks at the tornado and all that bullshit—that's fucking retarded.
And he disappears.
I think most people like a lot of things more than me.
Yeah, that's
they don't like fucking Voodoo Glow Skulls more than you do.
It's true, dude. Not many people do. Not many people have heard of the Voodoo Glow Skulls.
I'm sorry.
No,
to keep,
you're good.
Before I forget, your favorite band, Vampire Weekend, played a show in L.A. And they had, it was Voodoo Glow Skulls, The English Beat.
I'm in.
And then Vampire Weekend headlining.
Ugh.
Yeah, I saw them here in San Diego.
It's like dope, and then Vampire Weekend.
Hey, dude.
Yuck.
You would love them, dude.
Yuck.
I mentioned this a lot in the pre-show. I'll just skim over it, but I watched Furiosa 2 more times.
Oh!
It's out on video on demand to rent, so I watched that. And, you'll hear my thoughts on the pre-show. We've talked about it to death here. And another movie I watched, they re-released it on the summer solstice. Rewatching IMAX, Midsummer.
I missed the showing.
Yeah, I was.
Yeah, you
I was,
super missed it, dude.
Courtney and I were like, where are they? I was like, I'm not going to text them. They could be driving, you know, it's fine. And then they're busy. I was like, Rhett's a busy guy, you know, he's going to show up.
But then you're like, wait, he's not late for fucking movies.
No, he's not late for trailers.
Yeah.
And then I was like, where are you at? And, you know, you got wrapped up. You got busy with work and stuff.
I totally fucking, because Sophia and I had seen a recent re-release last fall.
Yeah.
And if that hadn't been the case, I think it would have been more. But yeah, I was totally like, holy shit.
Yeah.
We had the day off. But how was, it?
It was an hour in and you were like, oh, shit.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, because you said, hey, where are you at? And I was like, oh, is he talking to Jorge? Like, because of this dumb thing I sent? And it's like, no, motherfucker.
Physically, where are you at?
Yeah.
No, the last time I rewatched it was when I got it on physical media. I got the special edition. I'm a big fan of Midsommar. I really, truly enjoyed it way more than Hereditary. When it first came out, until recently, we saw Hereditary together in IMAX, and I was like, okay, that's still like the best.
That shit's incredible.
Yeah. But Midsommar, in theaters, in IMAX, incredible. It is the director's cut, and it's good supplemental shit if you've seen the theatrical cut already. I really don't recommend watching the director's as your first time go. There's some things where it's like, oh, it kind of hammers in like how Christian is just a piece of shit right off the bat with the extra added scenes.
Yeah.
You know, where the other ending, there's some argument to be made, you know, if that's even the point of the movie. But so I don't care for a director's cut. Drags on a little bit too much. There's a lot of just like, let's chat. Here's a ritual. Let's chat. Here's a ritual. You know, stuff like that. I will say when it comes to the theatrical Midsommar versus Hereditary, they're pretty neck and neck for me.
Yeah.
In IMAX, there's not too much that you missed out on besides maybe the opening.
Yeah.
With the score and all that. Like
the frickin' and then the turning over thing.
Yeah, it's incredible stuff. And then the very last 5 minutes with the rising music and stuff like that.
Yeah, and the fire.
And the fire. Beautiful stuff in IMAX. Besides that, it was fine.
Yeah. Can we... I suggest we have an AI... sighted person replace Anya Taylor-Joy with Florence Pugh and everything.
No.
And I think that would be better for us.
Florence Pugh might be able to pull off Furiosa better.
100%. 1,000%. Well, 1,000,000%.
Look, Florence, to be fair, I want to kind of hate on what you're saying just because, but no. Even the fucking Black Widow movie, she was good in that.
I'm saying.
Yeah. She was even good as the sister in that, like some stock ass thing. Like it was like, oh wow, she's fucking cool.
Mm-hmm. And dude, she had to pay a mortgage, bro.
Yeah.
She'll be back, dude.
Nah.
In the Young Avengers, dude.
Yeah. They were saying that, and then it's like I think they tabled that.
Yeah, they're like, right? Nah, how about
I don't think it's gonna work.
How about nah?
And then the last thing I saw, we can talk about it briefly if you want, because I said I was gonna see the Bike Riders and then we were late for the showing, so we're like, well, let's go see Russell Crowe's The Exorcism.
And then based upon the reviews I saw and what you were sharing on our Discord,
you also went.
You saw it immediately.
I saw it. Yeah, it hit me. It crawled up on me. It was like an hour. And then I was like, you want to go see a movie tonight? And she's all, yeah, what? I'm like, that fucking Russell Crowe one. And she's all, oh, yeah.
That's how the conversation went with Courtney. It's like, we're running late. You want to just watch this? And I was like, because if I were going to see something spontaneous, it's got to be like a dumb movie like that. And yeah, man.
So this movie—I
don't know how you guys do it, dude. I like, truthfully, I
this is an opportunity. I love it. It wouldn't be possible again if it weren't for the fucking monthly subscription thing where you can see up to 3 movies a week.
Yeah,
that's why.
And Russell Crowe.
Yeah. So what I'm saying is, like, I wouldn't make it to the theater to pay out of pocket.
Of course, yeah.
Fucking $20.
Yeah, and we've been talking about trash movies this year. Tarot, yeah. Imaginary, Night Swim.
Exactly. But this... Tarot, Imaginary, Night Swim, fucking, what are we missing? We're missing one. I mean, so, those are the big ones. Madame Web was fucking awful, yeah. But non-horror.
This still... movie kind of operates on a different...
This level. Movie has something else going for it in its badness. It's very, very serious. It's very solemn. It takes itself very seriously. It has this tone that's like really dire, and it's fucking awful.
Yeah, and this film was
fantastic.
It was filmed pre-COVID.
Yeah,
and then the pandemic happened, and they shelved the whole production, and then randomly decided, you know, let's finish this movie 4 years later, and they did it, and they put it out. And, like, there are scenes where it's, like, characters are in one setting, and the next thing you know, they're in a different setting without any explanation.
Any connective tissue.
Yeah, yeah. It's, like, it jumps around. It's not as bad as maybe... No, I mean, it's bad, but I was like, not like, it's not as apparent that there was filmed at two different, like there's reshoots like Fantastic Four with like the wig and no wig.
Yeah.
It's not like that, but holy shit, man. Like when I read that it was filmed at two different time periods or at two different times in its production, it's fucking, it made total sense because it just, like you said, there's nothing connective in between scenes.
And I can only assume they decided to bring it back from the dead because of the relative success, box office wise, of The Pope's Exorcist.
Right?
Because, yeah, what you're saying is absolute, it's incoherent. And then, like, and it does the, you know, day one, shoot day one. And when it gets there, it's done about 15 or 20 minutes of setup, which has not been effective. It's been, like, very, very dumb and not suspenseful. And so it's like, all of a sudden, it does a shoot day one, and it's like, oh, and then it does day two. And then it jumps from day two to day 15 without showing you anything substantial happening. It's like, oh shit.
You might as well call it day three or four. Yeah.
Exactly.
And this director,
it is fucking crazy.
He really thought he was cooking. Like, this guy was like, oh, dude, like I probably spent years writing this script. And the guy who wrote and directed it, I forgot his name, but he's the little kid vampire in Near Dark.
Yep.
And his
favorite vampire staggering emulator.
Yeah, really random, but dude, this is his big movie. I don't think he's done many like films he's directed, so this was like a big deal.
And it's trying to do this meta-textual thing of like they're trying to remake The Exorcist. They're calling it the Georgetown Project because the setting of The Exorcist, which I'm wondering, was that the original fucking movie's name? Because it would be so much better if this movie, this like almost all-time bad movie, was called the Georgetown Project, because that's just like a good bad movie name. Right? But dude, and it's like, it's about filmmaking, and it's about like the legacy, and it's about like fucking alcoholism, and it's about all this shit, and it's awful.
Yeah.
Which is like, fuck.
Yeah, like this Letterboxd review is like, the demon is alcoholism. The demon is lesbian. The demon is sexual abuse.
There's a part where he sees, Russell Crowe sees his daughter making out with another girl, and then he's like, she'll never eat your pussy like I could.
Jesus Christ,
is great. And then it's also like this team of people. Like, you've got like this pop star, you've got the daughter of this washed up actor Russell Crowe, and you've got the priest who's a consultant,
Frasier's brother.
And that's like Frasier's brother. Thank you. Fucking Miles.
Oh.
Yeah. I
always call him Frasier's brother.
Something Hyde Pierce, right?
Yeah, David Hyde Pierce is swinging for the fences like, like, dude, you gotta see him.
Yeah, there's a point where he gets
fucks.
You're doing it differently tonight.
Yeah, I've been meaning to, because I've been doing
it. Like giving it like a little bit extra, like, ugh. Yeah.
There's a scene where it's like, you know what? The reciting the passages and performing the exorcism ain't working. Yeah. So let me just stab him in the head with the crucifix and just end this movie.
Which makes no fucking sense. And then for further proof that they finished the movie years later, they have this tacked on ending where it shows one of the characters and she looks totally different, and it shows Russell Crowe in a confession booth, and he's like, I don't know, it just it feels like grace. Yeah, it does. It feels like grace. Cut to the credits.
Jesus,
I swear to God, dude, the fucking ending, the audible groan in the theater, I was just like, fuck.
Wow.
So yeah, when you said a bottom three banger, like, this movie is fucking.
It is the bottom three.
No, Imaginary is dumb as fuck and trash, and so is Tarot. This is like it's trying to like be high minded and trash.
Yeah, it was,
and it's hard to beat.
I had a smile like the whole time. I was like, dude, this is so bad. It's great.
Yeah. I'm glad you saw it. Thank you. Yeah, man.
Thank you for watching it.
Thank you for watching it.
It's rare that I'll really go out of my way to.
What I'm bummed about, though, is because I thought Pope's Exorcist was actually legitimately enjoyable fucking trash.
Yeah.
Like what? He's on a Vespa and all that. You know, if you've seen it, it's just like, what the fuck is this campy nonsense?
Yeah.
And when I fuck you and like all of that stuff. I hope it doesn't hurt the chances of that film sequel, which has already been greenlit.
Yeah.
Like, I hope it doesn't send the wrong message.
Dude, I'll watch anything with Russell Crowe at this point, because he's just, he fucking does not care.
And it was unhinged. Like, he was doing his unhinged fucking bullshit in the apartment, dude.
Mm-hmm.
You haven't seen
he
that
wants
yet,
to
huh?
basically nope. what he's trying to do is his whole career trajectory.
Yeah,
he's I've seen the interviews. He is obsessed with Marlon Brando.
I know. Yeah, he always has.
And been. Like he wants to like follow like the upswing and like the, even the downfall. He wants to like mimic the downfall of Marlon Brando.
Well, he's got
to
find his island of Dr. Moreau.
Yeah, that's what I'm waiting for.
Yeah, that's what I'm waiting for. Yeah.
All right.
We're going to take a break?
We're going to take a break and then come back and talk about a film. Yeah, right, what?
We're back! And Knock Loose is fucking dope. In no way whatsoever are they Mickey Mouse core.
They're the Mickeyest, Mousiest core.
Don't fucking say that.
Ever.
Just because he screams in a higher register does not mean that if you're listening to this show that you cannot go to Patreon.com/WhoGoesThere podcast and become a member of our Patreon.
Right.
What do you get? What do you get? That's the question. Well, what's in it for me? That's what you want to know.
How do I get mine?
Yeah.
Is what you're asking.
And what's in it for you is it's, look, if you're thinking that way, you'll never fucking be satisfied because doing something is its own reward. Right? But,
it's the journey.
It's the journey.
Not the destination.
Hey, come on. No, but, you get, access to our Discord. Which was real fun today during that fucking debate, I gotta say. That's why we need to do life is busy, to do one of those live viewings of something. That shit would be fantastic.
As long as it's not speed.
Hey, man, come on, dude.
Come on.
I'm neurodivergent
come
people.
Come on.
Speed 2.
Speed 2, yeah, we just skip over speed.
Yeah, if you guys start trashing Speed 2, I'll go with you. When it's the first 5 minutes of Speed, which is dope as fuck, and you and Matt are just like, why the fuck are they blah, blah, I'm like, shut up. This is dope. I made this movie with Jan Dubon. You also get the episodes early, like a week early recently.
Right now it's a lot early.
Yeah. They've been getting like a full week earlier, like they used to back in 2018, which is dope.
Yeah. There's a whole bucket of merch.
We got some merch to distribute. Good things are happening.
We're going very socialist with the merch now. We're going to just distribute it to the masses, let them figure it out.
Yeah, but there's still going to be tiers.
Of course.
There's still going to be tiers of you pay more, you get more. So not as socialist as we would like to think.
Yeah, it's a little capitalism. But you know what, dude? It's socialism with a little bit of stank of capitalism. You can handle that, right?
Yeah. Yeah, I can handle it.
I would like to handle it.
What else would you...
What?
What else you want to handle? Do you want to handle the coffee table?
I would love to handle the coffee table. So this is the release on this thing is a little strange, right? It's from 2022,
but it wasn't released stateside.
But it wasn't released stateside until 2024, a couple few months ago, right?
Yeah. See.
Okay. So the coffee table is a film also known as La Mesita del Comedor in España, which I fucking cannot fucking stand that accent.
El bolígrafo.
I cannot. The Spanish accent can get the fuck out. Get out. But okay, that's fine. I can swallow my hatred for one evening. Directed by Calle Casas. Ugh, what a name. Or no, it'd be Calle Casas.
Cayenita.
Written by Cristina Borovia and Calle Casas. Directed by David Pareja, Estefanía de los Santos. And Joseph Maria Rivera. What can I say? It's a movie called The Coffee Table.
What do you mean?
Jacob, what do you think of The Coffee Table, dude?
Man, I can't get a read on you guys on what you guys thought about it. This is one of the movies we kept pretty tight-lipped before this recording, so I don't even know what to expect. I will say this movie demands the viewer to, you know, it asks them, you know, are you willing to be immersed in this story? You know, put yourselves in the shoes of this character, Jesus. And if you don't, then the movie probably does absolutely nothing for you. If you can experience the way that it was intended, I think it's incredibly impressive. And it's just one of those movies that I also, at the same time, I can't really recommend to anybody.
You made him go first.
You know, and I think it's a great exercise in dread and grief. I think there's a lot of beats and moments that hang with you until the next one hits. And I liked some of its punches because they hit me in the gut, and all of it's very intentional. And I think it's an 88-minute endurance test of that. And, you know, the director is finding, like, pleasure in kind of causing this anxiety for its viewers, for the ones that kind of feel that immersion. This is probably the first time maybe ever that I actually had to pause a movie because I was this stressed out watching it.
What?
I really was affected by some of it. I was like, this is too much, man. And not even like
Not because of gore or something.
Yeah, not because of gore. I'm not super distressed. It was just like too
more
much.
Because of bore.
And a lot of a lot of people say this is a quote unquote dark comedy, and I know what they're trying to say because you kind of laugh at how just outrageous some of the sequences are. There's a lot of insult to injury, and I just want, you know, there's parts in the film where you kind of want to get up and like take a lap around the sofa and put my hands on my head and be like, I can't believe this is fucking happening. And it's a very like situational film that it asks a little bit of the audience to be invested in the story. But I thought the whole experience is effective, and we should probably warn the audience. We can't really talk about it without going into heavy spoilers, right?
Yeah.
Look, at this point, if you haven't watched the movie, go away. Yes. Come back when
you have to.
When you've watched it.
Watch it, and also try to go in. I think the best way to go into it is knowing absolutely nothing about it other than it's controversial, there's something crazy about it, and there's a coffee table, and it's called The Coffee Table, and that's it. Like, just go in knowing that. I think the first 10 minutes, you'll probably put two and two together and figure out what type of horrific thing might happen. It's like one or two things might happen. And especially knowing the controversy and what people are saying about the hype. So you kind of put it together. But yeah, I recommend just going in blind and coming back here and listening to this part. But my thoughts are, overall, I really enjoyed it, but I don't think I'll watch it again. I don't want to put myself through that stress. But it's kind of a weird novelty thing. You kind of want other people, like my young teenage self, like showing my friends in middle school to check out Human Centipede or Martyrs. I kind of want to show them a movie like this, you know, and it has some of some Ari Aster DNA to it, some very dark, comedic, psychological shit, but... You know, you guys are looking at me like with very different opinions. So let's hear what you guys got.
I think I want to let Rhett go.
Let's get it going.
Let's get it going.
You want me to go?
I would love you to go.
No. So earlier last week, Jacob's like, have you watched it yet? Because I'm kind of thinking maybe we should do the exorcism because how fucking trash it was.
Yeah.
Because you weren't sure that it could generate stuff to talk about. And then I was like, nah, man, I've been hearing about this fucking movie.
So when I said that, you haven't watched it yet?
No.
Okay.
And when I'm watching it last night, I'm like, this motherfucker was right. No, I'm just kidding. No, goddamn, where do I go with this? I like the premise. I like... like, shut up,
Jorge. You're like, I like the lighting. Really.
No, I'm not doing that. No, that's what I... Yeah. Look, when people talk about, not just you, I've seen a few places online when they're talking about Ari Aster.
Yeah.
Yeah, if there was no filmmaking involved. Like just because uncomfortable shit happens doesn't mean it bears any resemblance to his scene composition or his chops or his, like, I mean, fuck. I will give these, the actors, the thing is, I think it had a lot of moments that did stick with me just fine. And I think they're trying to squeeze a lot out of very little, and they kind of do a pretty serviceable job. And then it's undermined by decisions in bigger moments. It's undermined by the music choices, which are very like cloying and like, what is that for? And then like, it's undermined by this kind of like feeling again of it's kind of like the director doesn't really know how to make this as intense as he wants it to be. And then finally, like, in my head, I'm like, where is this going? Where does this go? And where it gets to, for me, is overall very, like, unsatisfactory. And it ends with one of the dumbest fucking lines I've heard all year, which is like
the ending
with the cops. Are talking. And I'm sorry to jump right there, but it's like the cops are talking, and it's like, well, this happened. This happened, and he. Where's the dad? He's in the car, or not? No, the brother. The brother-in-law, and he just keeps saying, uttering the same sentence. What sentence? The coffee table.
I was like, spooky. It's like a campfire story. It's so fucking cheesy. It's a fucking wet fart at the end.
It undermines the whole fucking thing. Yeah. But the moments where the actor is selling, like, and trying to sell that fucking extreme self-disgust and just like, how would you, and they're extending it out because he doesn't want to tell her as long as he doesn't have to. Performance-wise, I mean, I have to give props to... at first, I'm like, why is she, like, 70 and he's, like, 40, you know? But they make a thing about that. And the movie tries to fill it up with a bunch of subtext about aging, about being a mother, about how long she tried. And then, you know, the more context you hear,
she tried for 70 years.
Yeah. Yeah, and you're just like, fuck, she had to do this special therapy for, like, 2 years and all this stuff. Mm-hmm. For me, it's kind of about where it ends up, and it doesn't end up at a very satisfactory place for me. And stylistically, I feel the atmosphere is deflated.
Really?
The musical choice, like, music matters in a movie like this to me.
Yeah, yeah.
I'd almost rather no music. Like, don't put
fucking ice cream van music.
And it's like, oh, you don't get it. It's the juxtaposition of kids stuff with this, like,
it's montage music.
I know,
but yeah. Trying to play it. No, but like, it's not played to a montage. You're kind of like, oh, stop, yeah.
Well, and I get the dark comedy vibes because I was laughing at some of it, and I get the Aster-ness of the conceit of it. Like, yeah, fuck, what a horrible situation to sit in.
Horrible situations, the family dynamics, and it's another
fucking decapitated child.
There's a lot of yeah. Well, I want to hear your thoughts on it.
Shit. Okay. Look.
Here's Matt's. The coffee table, hella disappointing.
Well, I mean, I can't say that I'm disappointed because I don't know anything about, I didn't know anything about this movie before watching it.
Which is good.
When we talk about building tension in a film like this, that is the number one important and the top level thing that needs to be handled with care in a film like this. You have to build tension, and you have to do these things with the release of tension and then the rebuild of tension. So the idea that you've got a dead baby that is at the end of this movie, which you know, you see it coming, you know that it's going to culminate in a dead baby reveal at the end, although we know.
He's going to have to tell her.
Right.
Yeah.
The idea that they somehow falter at nearly every step of tension building, I feel, is its greatest letdown. So I am, you know, you mentioned earlier that this actor, and he's like doing this thing, and I go, I'm not seeing it in his face. I'm not seeing the amount of, I mean, maybe he's in shock. Maybe he's still going through it, right? Yeah. Like, maybe he's discovering the pain.
It'd be surreal
throughout the movie, but I don't believe that character is going through a whole heck of a lot. Although he is, I mean, obviously he is. He accidentally killed his baby, which is also another thing that I'm like, well, dude, if the whole thing is that, you know, is this a horrific event that is followed by a series of events where he's trying to sort of struggle with his humanity and his like downfall as a father and a husband and a brother and a blah, 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 blah. I like showing that scene off screen to me is a huge fucking letdown. I don't need to see the baby literally decapitated, but that moment happens and I'm like, I go,
you're wondering what happened.
Did he like punt that child into the table? Did he trip? What, like, because there's no intentionality in that scene, I find myself kind of like, well, do I think he's a scumbag because he killed this kid on accident, or do I think he's a scumbag because he killed his kid kind of in a fit of rage, which we all have as young parents? Like, I know that feeling, like, when your kid is screaming his head off and you can't soothe the little fucker, and you're like, yeah, I could strangle you right now. Like, I identify with those moments.
I don't think he's as I kind of got the funniness to me is how fragile, again, like, you could trip and kill your
kid. Well, that's what I mean. That's that's what I'm getting at. Like, whether or not there's intentionality behind the death of the child.
Yeah, showing it off camera, I hear what you're saying.
It is, to me, I think, is important. Not that I need to see, like, the child's head
I need context, though.
Yeah.
Yeah,
I need to have a little bit more juice in this opening. Well, not the opening scene.
Because I remember when the scene started and it had it, like, the shot outside the door, I'm already thinking, like, please don't do this like this. Like, there's no way they're going to just do this like this. And then it does.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh, dude. And it's not because, again, it's like, it, like you said, I don't need to see the fucking exactly what happened, I need some context.
I don't need to see the glass slicing through the poor baby's neck and his head rolling.
The head roll underneath the chair in that scene.
To be fair, I think there's a lot of, like, cool little moments where you have, like, the kid's head underneath the sofa for the entirety of the movie, and he just hasn't had the guts to go fish it out of there.
Yeah.
Like, I think that stuff is pretty effective. And the dog
finds it.
And truth be told, the brother who is introduced, like, nearly
three quarters
of the movie, almost at the end, I think is the highlight of this film.
That's you, dude.
It's me. I think he's the highlight of the film because, like, he's like upset at his brother for some stupid ass shit, and it's like, oh, dude, if you only knew there was a head underneath that fucking couch, it'd be a different conversation. And then, like, he does the thing that brothers probably would do, you know, try to, like, help him through the situation, like, all that stuff.
It's the release of the film, yeah.
Yeah, I kind of like all that stuff. This, like, side story with this 13-year-old girl and, like, the pedophilia stuff, like, I just
that stuff, whether it's good or bad, again, that's like more subtext. Like, it gives more subtext, and then his brother marries this real young girl, so they're bringing that stuff up over and over again. And it feels like padding to me. Like, they have a very thin premise, so they're trying to pad.
What are they trying to say? Or what is this director trying to say? Like,
I think he's trying to dredge up stuff about
age. The brothers, maybe.
Brothers, age, all that stuff. But also, it prompted me immediately to look at stuff about norms in Spain. Like, for instance, the legal marrying age was 14 in Spain until 2015.
Jesus.
So that's why I was like, is this some cultural thing? So that was, you know what I'm saying?
It's not that far off.
It's not that far off. And so, it's a pretty recent turnaround. And so I guess thematically... And I know it's like, what do you mean thematically? Just because they mention it? Like, no, it doesn't really develop that. I think they're trying to pad it and make it more substantial by throwing that kind of context in there, and the age difference and thing like that. I think the most convincing member of the cast actually is the mom. I thought she embodied the... I mean, she's got this... And again, I'm not... She looks much older than him. But she seems very much like that person, and she's got that smoker's voice, and she seemed very naturalistic to me, mm-hmm. and she seemed more naturalistic to me, and the brother, I would say too. The brother and her, I think, were the most natural feeling people in the movie.
Yeah. Yeah.
And they elevate the material as much as they can.
Yeah. Spanish Sydney Sweeney can get out. She can go.
Well, she's fine.
She's fine. I'm not saying she's not, but she can go. I find myself doing the same thing I do with all of these movies that are like that are based in a character study. I find myself getting too far into the fuckery of details. Like, I'm looking at this scene and I go, dude, an infant has got like a cup of blood, maybe. Like half a cup of blood. Like, an infant does not have an amount of blood that would drip all over the carpet and fucking drip in the drip in the crib and like cause enough dripping to make a noise on the fucking on the goddamn thing. And I go, dude, never in my life did we ever go through a 4-hour session and being like, oh, the kid is still asleep. We should not go. Like, I just, there's stuff happening here. And as like, and I'm going to do the thing as a parent is like, what are you fucking, what, like, who is this director kidding? Who is he trying to portray as
a... He wouldn't keep her away from the baby that long. That's what I mean. It's like padding it out.
Yeah. And not to say that like this mom isn't like, you know, going through her stuff and, you know, she's probably got a decent amount of like postpartum depression and all of this shit as like an older woman having a baby.
I think as it is, I think it might be better suited to a short film.
A lot of people said that.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I think the director just wants to fuck with the audience and just see how uncomfortable they can make it if they're willing to be kind of like engrossed in that story. I love the 6-minute opening with the salesman talking about this perfect coffee table that's unbreakable.
That was fine because it was goofy.
It was goofy, and I love it. That scene is enhanced tenfold when you get the punchline of the inciting incident with the baby. It makes that whole opening fucking hilarious in my opinion. It's such dark comedy that he's, and which is, it's compounded even more with the great performance from the wife, and she's laughing her ass off.
That's what about, I mean, her laughter broken, seems very fucking natural.
And she's making fun of him and this stupid coffee table he broke after he was just really wanted to get, I never get a choice in this marriage.
It's like a 10 minute introduction of a Chekhov's gun, essentially, is what like that whole opening scene is. It's like, okay, unbreakable glass. We're fucking gonna be there.
It shows a good job showing to me though both character, but mainly her character, because she gives no fucks. Like, she's telling this guy, like, you're a piece of shit. This is bullshit. It's an ugly table. He's a fucking shitty salesman. And so I like the how far all that goes. You know, because it tells me who she is. You know, and she sells it.
Yeah,
but yeah, as far as the context of. By the time, like, what the supposed irony of it being unbreakable, and that's like creative writing at Southwestern College type fucking shit, you know?
The movie, it definitely relies heavily on the dramatic irony you know, what you know versus, you know, what the other characters know. And, I don't know. I thought it was all really effective. I like how the movie almost feels like it's real time, like the 88 minutes. It probably spans over like 3 hours, maybe.
See, that would have been a nice formal exercise for me.
I do think the last 10 minutes are almost in real time. Yeah. Because they say something about 10 minutes, and then it's like, I looked at the runtime. I was like, oh, it's 10 more minutes.
Yeah, it was 13 minutes with the credits.
Yeah, and I thought, same shit. I go, well, okay, if the next 10 minutes kind of elapse in that frame and that time frame.
And we stick the landing like a good Twilight Zone episode.
Yeah,
like,
then, you this know, that's the juice, right? Like, I also enjoy, other than the literal ending, I enjoy the last like 5 minutes where things are happening, minus this pedophilia thing. I've had it. I don't know, dude. Like, am I being a little bit like overly sensitive about like, you know, like pedophilia in media? Probably, but I can't anymore. And so, like, minus that
part. Well, I don't think. I get what you mean by that word. You're saying how the girl is trying to, like, she's got a crush on this guy.
Yeah.
Okay.
The implied pedophilia.
Well, I don't, but that's the thing. I didn't get that he had done anything.
I don't think so either. Okay. I don't think so either. That's not what I'm saying. I guess, like, what that's like.
The subtext of bringing it up.
Right.
Right? To make you more uncomfortable again.
But when things start happening in that scene, and like the dog finds the head of the baby, and the mom, that scene was that particular scene was very cool, where she walks out on the balcony, and then like the next scene is just like that
2-minute sequence of just everything happening, the worst of the worst.
Yeah. I think that stuff is super effective. I just think that there is so much that happens in between these like really effective moments.
Yeah.
That I find myself being almost assaulted by by dialogue that doesn't do anything. It doesn't really. It doesn't advance. Like,
it doesn't advance a story, but I love that, like, all the dialogue's got this double meaning now to the audience because they're talking about kids. Oh, I'm so glad I'm a parent now. And it's like, you know, your kid's dead, you know? Like, all that shit, it's just so dark and uncomfortable for me. And there's a lot of that talk in the movie, talking about the kid and all this without them even knowing what's actually happened to it. And the dinner table scene, you know, and he's eating his food and staring at the baby head and just staring back at him. He's like, what was he eating, like pie or something? Or
yeah. And then it's all, it's
baby,
it's
brains to him.
Yeah. It's all, of course, bloody. And it's like, I think the issue I have with those scenes is like in an otherwise sort of like grounded movie, you've got these oddly surreal and kind of like almost metaphysical scenes. And I think it takes me out of the humanistic part of the movie, where it feels to me where it's trying to be very grounded, but you've also got these like odd kind of dream sequence-y sort of things. And I don't know if ultimately like I'm irritated by it or if I'm just kind of, for lack of a better word, bored of it a little bit.
What I do appreciate about, like, again, like, not just the premise, but the conceit of the film, right? And this is present in Aster movies and other people's movies where, like, the goal is, it's not just discomfort, right? It's partially that. But it's also to create, like, this notion that it's not about, like, fear of the afterlife of hell. It's like you could have cruel things could happen in your life, and your life could be absolutely fucking intolerably purgatory, right? And nothing supernatural about it. You could be struck with fucking immeasurable fucking grief and tragedy in a moment over some bullshit. It can really plunge you into, like, not just despair, but your life would be like hell. Like, I like the idea of that.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Like a single moment that, like, alters your...
Yeah, and it takes, like Jorge's saying, it's very fucking a delicate line to tread to... First, you have to nail the scene where it happens. Then you have to maintain the thing, build the tension, release it, build it again, and just complete and constantly dwell in that while also trying to... They're also trying to build character while they're doing that. Like, it's actually trying to do a few things. Yeah.
The character is trying to find, the whole film, he's trying to find the courage to tell her, tell his wife. To do something. To do something, because it's obviously...
So I get the idea.
Yeah, people are frustrated, like, oh, why don't he... That's not what I would do, you know, just call 911. He's going to do that eventually, but this is the buildup of him not knowing how to react, you know, yet, what to do.
I had that same feeling with Speak No Evil. The movie,
fuck yeah.
I had that same feeling where I almost felt like nobody acts like this. Like,
well, I disagree with you.
No, I know. But I have that same sort of like altered thing where I'm like, who the fuck acts like this? Like, in a normal human wouldn't act like this. But I get that there is layers of like you've killed your kid.
And there's a variety of ways
you wouldn't act as you would normally, I guess, quote unquote. The thing that kind of bums me out a little bit is that, you know, so the scene happens where this baby is killed.
Yeah.
And then, like, he has an eternity of time before his wife gets home. Right? Yeah. There's no, I don't feel a sense of urgency to this dude's actions. If he is,
the suspense wasn't built in that way.
I don't mean necessarily like the things that he's doing, he doesn't have an urgency to them. I mean the pace of the film doesn't feel urgent.
No, like, I think it would have been helpful if she's like, I got to do this and I'll be home in 20 minutes. And then we have an idea of like, fuck.
Yeah, like he's
got to have the ticking clock.
Yeah. Yeah. That would be helpful, but I guess maybe it was to be ambiguous.
There's certainly an attempt at that with her, like, you know, calling and texting and having a conversation at the grocery store with somebody, and you know, them calling him also. Like I feel like there is some intentionality with the pace of it, but I do also understand that, you know, you've got an hour and 30 minutes to do this effectively. Like, how could you possibly, like, craft this whole thing where it's 100% great? Yeah.
Well, I did find myself, despite, like, you know, what I perceive as the shortcomings of the movie, right? Because I don't, it's not like it's a piece of shit. I hate this movie. It's, you know, and it's an indie film, and you know, despite that though, it did have me asking myself, how would I respond, right? And I think that's like, I mean, seriously, I'm watching the movie and it's like, I really don't know. And so that's why, and it's not like, oh, I have to give the film props for that. It's just, it had me legitimately not sure how I would respond if I was in that situation. Like, what would you do?
Yeah.
Well, I mean, what would you do?
I think that's ultimately the conceit, right? Is that I don't think it's a movie about like, oh, like what is exactly like the right answer. It's about exploring that space in between like the incident and what you would.
Yeah, how do you fucking tell someone that?
Yeah.
Like how, you know, or do you just leave and get, and that's what I mean, like when you talk about grief, it's good, like you mentioned, let's talk about grief, but it does have different people respond differently, like, and it's not linear, and people don't respond the same way. Some people would leave. Some people could take off and be fucking, they could go get, some people might disappear. Some people might call the police.
Or just immediately eat yourself off the fucking
some
building.
Some people might immediately fucking kill themselves. Other people, like, I mean, shit, what are you going to do? Tell her over the phone?
Yeah.
Or some people be like, you need to come home right now. And it's just like, it is a fucking, it's a nightmarish question to ask. Yeah. And that's the film's best achievement.
And yeah, it's not like, it's not one of those things where I'm like, well, why didn't you do CPR? It's like, well, no, clearly the kid's head has been chopped off. Like, you're not going to attempt to revive this baby who's, you know.
But then they show the blood on the pillars of the table, which are breasts, dude.
Oh, dude. Damn. Damn.
I liked him having to do a fucking diaper change. I was like, dude, this is crazy, man.
Okay, yeah. See, like that, too. It's like, I don't know what to make of that. Like,
I dug it, man. It was, first of all, it's just morbid as fuck. I mean, the whole movie itself is just so morbid.
Because his towel's released, huh?
Yeah, and that's why he had to change it. And he was like, what do I do? You know, do I even bother? And he just did it. You know, it's just him. He's like, I don't know. I'll just do it. Yeah.
It's fucked up, dude.
It's fucked up, dude.
Here. I guess Stephen King gave a ringing...
Yeah, that's how I first heard about this movie. It picked up a little steam during the festival circuit like a year ago. And then Stephen King said, you know, it's the darkest of dark comedies. It's Coen Brothers dark comedy, you know. And I get what he's saying. I really dug just how brutally dark it was. I liked the dialogue and the insult to injury and just the dramatic irony. I kind of liked the melding of all of it. I really was in pure dread for the entire movie because it was, I don't know, and like the whole like setup with the kid, and they mention it for a little bit, and then they purposely let you forget about it. So when it's at the peak of anxiety of the worst and worst case scenarios, let's bring her back in now, you know,
yeah,
and just add on top of it, and it's just, I don't know. It kind of reaches this point, but
it, well, and again, to me, it gets that tag at the end.
No, oh, yeah.
It's
yeah.
just really, and again, to me, it kind of points out the, you know how I get goofy about names sometimes, like the mm-hmm. coffee table. Like you gotta do something. You gotta mm-hmm. you gotta back that up with the ending, but that doesn't say the coffee table.
Yeah,
like fuck. But
yeah,
this is an interview with Variety I'm looking at here. What was the inspiration behind naming the film simply The Coffee Table? They're asking the writer director. He's the writer and director, I'm assuming, right?
I think so.
He says all horror movies have powerful, dark, scary names. Not necessarily, but okay. I wanted to make a terrifying film, but with a harmless, ridiculous, everyday name. So the idea was to have an innocuous name. That's what I mean. It shows to me, like, regardless of like this idea of showing how life can change into purgatory in a second because of human frailty. To me, though, like these kind of basic ideas of I'm gonna put kid music with this scene and I'm gonna name this thing with this innocuous name, like that's not particularly clever or sophisticated to me.
Yeah.
And it's something that's he's even saying he's doing it to make it like not a horror name, you know, but anyway, I just don't think it's like The Coffee Table, and in Spanish, La Mesita del Comedor, or his favorite. So seriously, is a movie like that disturbing? The answer is yes. I also wanted to trick the viewer. I'm going to watch this movie with this silly name and wham. Well, no one would watch. I would not watch this movie with this silly name
horror film
if I didn't hear it was fucked up.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, I mean, you know, I don't know. He's no Demian Rugna, I'll tell you that.
I agree. Yeah.
But
I think this is a good, I think, is it his debut? It's, at least it's one of his, you know, first efforts. I think it's kind of promising. I could see this guy kind of,
yeah,
he's going places.
Oh, yeah. I mean, that all that remains to be seen, you know.
We'll see about that.
Stephen King, like, obviously, what, you know,
Stephen King, he doesn't have a bad thing to say about any movie.
Well, he could chill with his hyperbole. Like, he said this is, it's the darkest thing he's ever seen. Like,
I mean, maybe, like, from a cinematography standpoint, sure.
Maybe the darkest thing in the last 48 hours.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, and today we watched the fucking, by the way, we watched the debate. That's the darkest thing I've seen in the last 48 hours. Yeah.
No, I mean, he's does have a point. I mean, this is a whole movie around a guy who accidentally beheads his baby.
Well, what about those other exploitation films? But like, that's the thing, one where they fucks the baby.
Yeah, but that I feel like that lacks like so much more just
what
substance and just kind of just artfulness to the direction of it and everything and the performances, you know.
Yeah,
this feels way less exploitive. I mean, it's not like they even show the death on screen, you know.
That's true. This
yeah, I guess let me back that out. I don't want to I don't literally want to see the dude tripping and the heads.
No, context.
I just wanted to have a little bit more, like, if there was some intentionality behind the death, like, that would be more interesting to me. If, like, he threw the baby kind of in a fit of rage, that would be...
Oh, I thought he just tripped.
We're pretending, you know, well, we're not, but it sounds as though there's only two ways to do this, show it or not. That's not correct, right? Yeah. Hitchcock is a master of, you know exactly what happened without showing you.
Yeah.
And the filmmaker did not do that. I don't fucking have a clear idea what happened. And it's like, really? Well, why do okay. you need... Well, I don't, like...
I just... he was trying okay, to stretch so wait, the baby.
Let's fucking go to logistics.
The
plate,
and he was trying to build it. He was getting frustrated. And then you even have, like, the intro credits of, like, the crazy, you know, diagram of building it.
Look at the new coffee table.
And he's getting frustrated because there's a missing screw. And then he has the baby's crying. And then he's pacing. And then you hear the trip and the glass break. And then the baby stops crying.
Do you actually hear a trip?
I just watched the movie last night. He's like, you hear dialogue. He's all, look at the coffee table. Look at the new coffee table. Which to me, again, is kind of forced because it's not like, whatever though. And we're out here.
You're like two rooms away.
And then
you're down the hallway.
Yeah, you're in the hallway. And then you said you see the fucking head roll.
You see something roll underneath. Yeah,
you see something roll. And then the thing, and then you see the glass and it's this huge fucking shard.
Yeah.
What I'm assuming is if he trips. So let's say you drop the baby. The baby breaks the glass. And how does this decapitate the baby?
That's what
I will recreate it just like that. San Diego police officer.
Dude, it is a little bit
this
like...
This is the thing that I'm specifically talking about
when I know I you see are.
Shit like this. When I'm like...
Well, it's the whole premise of the movie.
The literal physics of it is two things, right? He's holding a baby,
and let's
just suppose he's going like this, and he's going like, look at the coffee table, look at the coffee table, and he falls, okay?
Yeah.
He falls. He falls on the table.
He fell like this, and he broke behind him, and then he went, oh.
So he's going like this,
inside, like, look at the baby. Underneath.
He's going like this, he's going, look at the table, so he falls like this.
Yeah, see, I didn't even think about that.
Manages to cut his hand, and somehow,
that's the thing.
I just want a little bit more juice.
Yeah, I think what matters is like the movie is the worst case scenario among all worst case scenarios. That's the point. It's like this is a one in a million chance of this ever happening, and it happened to him. And
the baby fucking put the filmmaking down the glass.
Like when I see someone, fuck man, when I see there's a nail in a stairway. I have a clear idea what's going to happen here. When I see their face later, but not the nail go in, I'm good. Like, this is like, I see the glass. I see you laid it there. And then the next thing I see is this big shard of glass and the baby's decapitated. I don't have enough context to fill in these gaps.
I heard the glass break, and he immediately, the moment the head rolls, he starts, like, breathing and freaking the fuck out.
You know what? Let me ask you this. Let's say it showed in graphic detail the fucking baby being decapitated. Then what would you think of this movie?
I wouldn't care for it.
What?
I don't think
it would. Well, why should it be bad? Just because it does show the reality, though.
Yeah. No, I'm
not saying that doesn't make it good.
Because it would try to be shocking for shock's sake.
It's being shocking without showing it.
Yeah.
So it is shock for shock's sake.
I think that's good enough. And sometimes I think it's like the Texas Chainsaw Massacre effect, like the whole like...
slide door?
Yeah, right, you don't have to see it. And people fill it in their heads. Like people who grew up watching tell you that.
Because he's got a fucking hammer and got it.
People will say they saw the kills with the chainsaw even though they never showed it, you know? Like,
that's because Tobe Hooper's a fucking master.
Oh, yeah. It's true.
Yeah.
But I feel like people could put in totally fill in the blanks, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, without the very specifics of how it broke.
No, I'm not trying to be a stickler, because I know like Jorge's usually a stickler for that, but I didn't feel the tension in the scene where it would need like just like the fucking situation.
For me, that's me. I was like, you know, I thought maybe you would have you having kids, it would be like this whole like, oh, it's so taboo and oh.
No, I just don't think there's like there are things about like.
It's a good discussion, though.
Holding an infant, right? That you have to do certain things to hold an infant, right? Like, and I'm thinking, like,
it would be hard to decapitate a fucking infant like that. If you were trying to,
you'd have to break the glass first, and then drop the child on the broken glass.
Have to be like fucking, that's what I'm saying. He breaks the impact, breaks the glass, and decapitates. So he's like.
Like, yeah, dude.
It would be really fucking hard to do intentionally. If I was bashing the fucking baby's neck on the fucking coffee
table. It would be dead by
impact. This is like the magic bullet theory.
It would be dead by impact before it got its head cut off. And also, like a spinal cord and a spine is not a
those vertebrae don't just snap off that way.
It doesn't just cut off cleanly, man. There would have to be some like.
Okay, now he's doing.
He would have
this is like a newborn. Though,
he would have to fucking cut the glass and then like force the baby's head through.
Well, here's the thing. Here's the thing too. It's another kind of like, again, like the I'm gonna do the juxtaposed music, and I'm gonna do the innocuous name. And I'm gonna. How the baby's not only gonna die; they're gonna be decapitated. A lot of this would be solved
horrifically.
Yeah. A lot of this would be solved if you just didn't have the baby decapitated. But you're like trying so hard that it's like you could show us a dead baby without showing us the death scene. And because you know, like this area right here, this shit's real soft. Shit's real fucking soft. And like I would be heartbroken. And you would mission accomplished. I don't need to have a decapitated.
Yeah, like
so. Who's trying to be shocking here? It's like, oh, there's a head under the fucking. There's a head. How the fuck the head get there? You know?
Yeah. Again, we're doing the thing. But you know, it's one of those instances too where like either this child dies instantly by having its head. Removed from its body, or the alternative is you have a couple moments, maybe a minute or two, where you actually show this dude trying to like save his baby, you know, like maybe it got a fucking slice in the neck, and you see this like desperate kind of like attempt to save its life. Oh, and then it's fuck, like, okay, now I've got blood everywhere,
which would be so wrenching. And also we got the corner of the fucking table. And you got an eye socket.
Oh, chink!
Like, dude, we don't even have to see anything. We could just see that he's got the bit, and he trips, and then we don't even see, we could see his back and hear a sound.
You're making it sound like this movie would be way better if they showed, like, 2 seconds of like, baby.
They don't need to show the baby even. Like, in The Nightingale, there's a fucked up thing, and you don't barely see anything, but it's just like,
Yeah, yeah.
That's fucked.
I've recently become an uncle, and my sister's has a 6-month-old, and the day after this movie, she asked me to hold it, and this is a, I've never held a baby, and I literally refused. I was like, I don't want to. I'm like looking at the coffee table, and I'm like, I don't want to hold this.
Looking around, baby. And she's like, oh, there's a rock right there, dude. I could drop this
accidentally.
Baby.
It did make me think about that too. Like, parents generally, you don't want to get a table like that, right? Because it has edges. Am I wrong?
Not until they're walking.
Yeah.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
But we were, yeah.
And you put like the rubber on the corners.
Yeah. I mean, not until they're walking. That's like a year or two down the road.
Yeah, dude. Fucking.
Yeah.
I don't know.
So let's rank top dead babies in movies. We got old. That died of lack of attention.
Yeah.
And they didn't even. That was another one where show the baby. The movie. Your movies are M. Night Shyamalan. Ding Dong. Show the
fucking baby.
Sim Salabim Saladu Saladim.
Yeah, you got Serbian film, but that's talked about enough.
Well, obviously, right?
What else?
We got Trainspotting.
Yeah,
Trainspotting. That's fucked.
You got Hellraiser 2 with the baby's mouth sewn shut, which is not like a dead baby, but it's dead baby imagery, and I, it's really fucked up. It's always been fucked up.
Are you typing something that'll put you on the list?
Movies with a baby death.
Look, and this is not a baby, but Hereditary's fucking death scene. Jesus Christ.
It is more effective.
Somebody goes 100%. Revenge of the Sith for dead babies and children in a movie.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, good call.
So we got Hereditary, Mother, Funny Games. Funny Games?
Mother was fucking... See, and ooh,
Funny Games.
Funny Games. Funny Games didn't have a baby. No, but it was a kid.
Kid, yeah.
It was a kid.
It's a Dawn of the Dead remake.
Dude, Mother is fucking great. They eat great. The baby.
Yeah.
I would like to do that on the show.
That's top.
Yeah. That movie has fucking...
Dawn of the Dead has a zombie baby.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Dude, he's ready.
That's
Zack Snyder's ready for Planet of the Dead, dude.
You know what? They're going to start giving Zack Snyder a lot of big franchises, and he's going to really knock it out of the park. Psych!
God damn. Sicario's got a bunch of dead kids at the end.
That shit don't count. Yeah. Yeah, I think we covered the Pan's Labyrinth. Does Pan's Labyrinth?
Pan Labyrinth?
Pan's Labyrinth?
What?
Pan's Labyrinth has a dead baby? Don't they?
It's got a dead child.
It's got fucking Guillermo del Toro.
It's
like
got
having the guy show, put that fucking bottle in his head, motherfucker.
Yeah, yeah.
Because they need to show, you need to show how this guy is, and you won't have any questions after that.
Yeah.
You know?
All right, well, that's us for the coffee table.
For the coffee table. It's available for video on demand. I think it was, I got it $3.99 on Apple.
Yeah, it's pretty cheap. Yeah.
Go watch Russell Crowe's The Exorcism.
Oof. Fucking awful.
No, in fact, go watch Russell Crowe's The Pope's Exorcist.
Woo!
Instead. Yeah. That's got the juice.
Yeah. It's well... You want to qualify it, or you're just saying straight up?
No, it's got the juice.
Yeah, it does have the juice. That's an objective fact.
All right, we'll see you next week, idiots. Bye.
This is Jacob. Bye.
Bye, Sophia.
Zooby, zooby.
Zooby, zooby.
I'm not going to worry wrinkles in my brow. Nothing's ever going to be all right, no how. No matter how I struggle and strive. Never get out of this world alive.